This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com, the Big Change Program, and WellStartHealth.com. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live an adventuresome and ambiguity-tolerant life. My guest today, Jeff Seal, is a comedian, a documentarian, an adventurer, and an undercover clown operating out of New York City. I discovered him through my son, Elon. Jeff is one of Elon's favorite YouTube artists, and Elon shares some of his videos with me, and I love how he points out the absurdity, the hilarity, and the injustices of life through art and comedy. And I was particularly struck by Jeff's videos on dumpster diving and train hopping, because both share a common theme, finding freedom by questioning assumptions about what is and isn't okay to do. In what, let's face it, is a consumer society, and where supposedly we're free to do or be whatever we want, but where our freedoms are really undermined by our unthinking obedience and our unquestioning acceptance of rules and norms. And both dumpster diving and train hopping really contradict those norms in kind of a big way. So I reached out to Jeff partly to learn something from his experience and skill in educating his audience through humor, vulnerability, and art, but also because I was really drawn to his spirit, and I wanted to see how I could infuse my work with more creativity, more humor, more adventure, and more vulnerability. And this conversation turned into one of my favorites. We also recorded it on video, so it's also up on YouTube, and you can find a link in the show notes, which will be at plantyourself.com/286. Before we get to the interview, one quick announcement, and that is the WellStart Coach Training, which has been a big success, has been extremely gratifying. We're taking about 40 people through the program right now. We're going to do a second run. We've learned a lot. We've made a lot of improvements. And the goal is in 12 weeks to have you ready to coach other people on their way to health and wellness and a good diet and a good lifestyle. And there's a lot of coaching programs out there, and over the next several weeks, I'll be sharing what our participants, what the folks who've been through the program say about it and why they think it's different and maybe more useful for them than some others out there. But for right now, I just wanted to get it on your radar that sometime in October, so in the next 6 weeks, we'll be beginning another run. If you're interested in finding out more about it, just email me at howard@wellstarthealth.com. Let me know a little bit about yourself. Why you're interested in the coach training. I'll get you on the notification list. And in a couple of weeks, you should start seeing some more details about that. All right, that's enough of that. Let's get to today's show. So without further ado, Jeff Seal, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, so you are one of my favorite YouTubers. And awesome. And the reason I love your work is that everything you do reminds me of some assumption that I've made about normal or reality or what's okay that that you're kind of poking a hole at in.
Oh, cool, nice.
And you do it as a documentarian and as a comedian, so you have a certain amount of license that I envy. I don't know if I should envy it or just emulate it, because like there's no reason I can't do it too.
Sure, why not?
So I'd love just start by like your story. Like, how did you get into this world, and what sort of drove you?
Right. I mean, so yeah. So like, I've always been into comedy. Like, I wanted to be a comedian since I was a kid. Basically, I started doing improv in high school, and then continued it in college, and then. After college, I went to clown school in San Francisco.
Oh, which one?
The San Francisco Circus Center, or is the Clown Conservatory at the San Francisco Circus Center.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was like a year-long program. yeah, it was like, because I've always been into physical comedy, and I studied mime for a while in college. I did like a semester in Paris and was taking a mime class. And then after the semester ended, I sort of stayed and continued doing mime and working there.
Uh-huh.
And then so I went to class. Basically, also in college, I got really into Chaplin movies. I really like Charlie Chaplin. I like silent comedy. And then I read Waiting for Godot. And, like, you know, they're basically two tramp clowns in many ways. And Beckett was, like, influenced a lot by the circus and the music halls and all that. So, yeah, I really liked that. And then I found out about the Clown Conservatory, so I decided to do that.
See, that's, I'm finding this hilarious because I did a semester of mime in college. I thought about clown school. I forget the name of the film, but Chaplin's on a boat and he does this thing with the plates and he like spins like a dozen plates. And I would practice that.
Yes, did that. Yeah.
And when it came time to like I love this. Like I went to Edinburgh Fringe and with the clown with the mime troupe and hung out with them and played mime games and improv. And when it came time to like bite the bullet, I'm like, what, you know, a nice Jewish boy is not going to waste his education in clown school. And I feel like, you know, like there was something that you had, whether it was boldness or an imperative that somehow I didn't follow through on.
Well, a lot of nice Jewish boys decided to go into comedy. I definitely wasn't the first, but what was the mime troupe you went with?
It was just at my college, Princeton University, mime.
Okay.
You know, we'd take classes and we'd learn how to do the talks and pull and be in the box. And and it was like more fun than anything I was doing. And yet there was still this voice in my head saying, this isn't worthy of you, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Well, it's funny because like growing up, my dad was always telling me and my brother, he's like, you know, you guys need to get a skill. You have to have a skill that you can market and you'll always be able to get a job or whatever. And then, so, you know, I majored in English literature and then I went to clown school. Like, neither of those are very marketable skills, you know, but like I have a specific memory. I remember being in clown school, balancing on a rolling globe. It's just a big wooden ball and juggling pins and being like, this is a skill. I don't know how marketable it is or if it'll get me a job, but it's definitely a skill. But yeah, what was the other thing I was going to say about that? Anyways. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you have a plan? Like, you know, like were you paying for it yourself? Were you saying, hey, Dad, I have this great idea about my career. It involves, you know, a 3 foot high wooden ball and juggling pin.
Well, both my parents, they've been, you know, really cool and supportive about me wanting to go into comedy or whatever. The clown school, there was like work trade. So you could pay for part of it. Through like, you know, doing work trade. So that, you know, helped a lot paying for it. But yeah, both my parents were, you know, they were supportive of it for sure. You know, I mean, it's also kind of, I think I'm probably a little bit younger than you. And it's like, you know, with each generation, it's like our grandparents, you know, they are great grandparents, like, you know, worked for nothing so their kids could enter the middle class, and then that generation worked hard so then their kids could become doctors and lawyers, and then the next generation, you know, decided to like become poets and improvisers, you know what I'm saying? So I'm sort of that generation where we're had the luxury to make, you know, stupid decisions, would be like, this is what I want to do with my life. I'm going to go to clown school, you know?
Right. But I bet a lot of the people who influenced you were the ones who really disappointed their families, right? You know, like who are some of the people who you watched and said, I want to do that?
Well, like Chaplin was a big one. In high school, I was obsessed with Jim Carrey. And, you know, he has his whole story about like his dad was like a jazz musician, but had to stop doing it because he had to support a family. And so he was sort of able to live, you know, his dream in a way that his dad couldn't. What are other, I mean, you know, all the sort of like basic comedians. I really liked Robin Williams when I was younger. Now I like, you know, I like Zach Galifianakis. I think he's really funny. Yeah, there's all, it's, you know, it's a gamble to, you know, want to do something like that. I've never really had, any sort of backup plan. I don't have any skills in any other field other than like, you know, filmmaking and comedy.
Gotcha. So, yeah. You know, so Zach Galifianakis reminds me of you in a little bit. So like there are certain comedians I can watch and I can relax.
Sure, sure.
People like you and him, like when I see you sticking your microphone in people's faces in, you know, on the street in New York City, or the, you know, the cars who are honking, like I get nervous for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so one of the things that I really love about the work you do is how scared I would be to do it. Like what sort of person I would have to be, or how I would have to, you know, adapt, change myself. So where, how did that part of you come about? Was that just natural, or did that take a lot of work?
Well, I mean, it's funny, like last night I was watching Sacha Baron Cohen's new show on Showtime. Have you seen or heard about that?
Yeah, he is like the ultimate for me in, oh my God, I could never do that.
Me too. I watched it. I'm like, how does he, I mean, he, it's crazy. I mean, I think he's hilarious. And he's, you know, he's great. There's some of the stuff that I watch and I just feel, I feel bad for some of the people on his show, you know? And yeah. Like, I know that I couldn't take it to that level, but, yeah, you know, I mean, I still deal with like anxiety and nerves for sure when performing. Even, you know, especially like live performing, you know, like I still get anxious. You just sort of got to push through it. But like with those videos, stuff on the street, I like talking to strangers and stuff like that. I just sort of think of it as like having a conversation. It's like, so my dad passed away like a little over 2 years ago. And one thing that my mom kept on saying is like, among a lot of things, but she would say how like my dad could talk to anyone, you know? And I think that's sort of a quality I kind of have, is that like, just, I'm pretty good at like having a conversation with, you know, different types of people from all different walks of life, you know? So for those videos, it's, just kind of, you know, having a conversation and trying to, throw in some humor there whenever you can. But yeah, Man on the Street stuff is that, you know, that's fun and doesn't really stress me out too much, you know?
Gotcha. So a lot of your videos are sort of Man on the Street, where you're just observing and you're the eyes and ears of the audience. But there's also a whole bunch of stuff, and this is the stuff that I really love that you do, in which you are sort of taking life to an extreme.
Right.
Right. So where did that come from?
I think so I have a very sort of minor case of Tourette's syndrome and obsessive compulsive disorder. It's not even really noticeable. I have, you know, friends, when I tell them, like, you do, I had no idea. It's, you know, it's very mild. But one thing that I've read about, you know, people, the sort of personality type of people with Tourette's, is that like they're sort of attracted to dangerous situations or whatever. Or like, I think that I definitely, I don't know if I want to use the word addiction, but I do have fun doing sort of dangerous kind of things, you know, like it's sort of a rush for me. Uh-huh. So like with train hopping, that's like, I just love every aspect of it. It's like, you know, you're sneaking in somewhere, and then, you know, there's the danger of getting on a moving train, and obviously you have to know what you're doing and be very careful. but it's just I just get a real rush from it. It's, you know, it's exciting and enjoyable.
Right. But I want to contrast that with, say, like Jackass, where they're doing things that are a rush, but utterly pointless, like going down a hill in a shopping cart.
Right.
Or taking a shit in a toilet in a Home Depot or something. Like, like your stuff is like fascinating to me because of, like, you're making a comment about, like, to me, it's about, like, take off the bubble wrap. We have a world in which there's so many more opportunities than we think. And there's so much more freedom. Like, I see you train hopping and I'm like, I want that freedom, whether it's a train or whether it's dumpster diving. It's like, I want the freedom to be able to cross some of those boundaries. When did that start for you?
I guess I've just always been attracted to that stuff. With dumpster diving, growing up, so I grew up in Southern California and I would go out skateboarding like every day with my friends. And it was like very Jackass like. I had a camcorder and we'd go out and film ourselves skateboarding and also doing stupid stuff. Never really on the level of like Jackass. It's not that extreme of a level, but we go out skateboarding and there was this business park near my house and we used to go dumpster diving in there all the time. We'd go out skateboarding and then we'd like just go dumpster diving and find all this stuff. And so ever since then, to me, like, dumpster diving is kind of just like going to a flea market where everything is free. You know, you got to dig through some actual garbage and trash, but, I've just always been into that. And, I don't know, I guess I just like the adventure of it. I remember seeing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when I was, I don't know, 10 or something like that. And just like afterwards, like going in my backyard and just being like, I want some crazy adventure to happen right now. You know, like I was so jealous. I wanted to do that. So I guess I've always just been like trying to find that, you know, crazy adventure that, you know, is you just kind of have to look for it you know, take the leap and do something stupid, I guess.
Yeah. Now, so I'll out myself. So yes. When we lived in another house in Durham before we moved to where we are now, and we got some chickens. And so there was a Whole Foods downtown, and they had their compost dumpsters were like the kind you wheel, the little plastic ones that were very easy. And so we would go and like get greens for our chickens. And after a while, like we'd find the greens, and then we'd find like apples and sweet potatoes and organic apples and great. And we're like, okay, like this is a crime that this stuff is going to get thrown out. And I got really into it.
Yeah.
And I felt like saving money, recycling. And it was a thrill. It was like, if you had given me the same amount of money to go buy the stuff in the store, I would have said, no, I'd rather dumpster dive.
100%. Totally. Yeah. I feel the same way. Exactly. Like, so with dumpster diving for food, I have a good friend who does it a lot. They still do it. And so she took me out. I always wanted to do a video on dumpster diving. And then I started dumpster diving for food with my friend. And I was like, oh, this will make a great video. And I just made the video. And then while editing it, I started to sort of, do a little more research on food waste and stuff and found out all this stuff. And I sort of added that layer after the fact, you know? And it's, you know, like everybody, I'm like freaked out by climate change. It's like really scary. And then also just all the other things, like really upset about rising inequality. Mm-hmm. And so it is, it's just absurd that, like, you know, so much food is thrown away and there are still people in this country that don't have enough to eat. And it is one of those things that's just crazy. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, but my point is, when I first set out to make this video, I was just like, I'm just going to make a how-to video on how to dumpster dive for food. And then adding the layer of, like, you know, the sort of politics of it came afterwards. And then from there, I sort of started thinking about those things a little bit more. My mom's also really active with, you know, climate change. She works with the Sierra Club and, like, the Citizens Climate Committee or whatever. They go and you know, lobby Congress and all that. But yeah, I think for all the videos, it's like to add an extra layer of politics or commentary makes it a little deeper. Like, I love Jackass. Jackass is hilarious. But I think it just the way the world is now, you can't, like, you just kind of have to sort of put it in a larger context. I think for me, it makes it a more rewarding video, and it's things that I really do genuinely care about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, so it's, I love that you start out because, hey, this is fun. This is something that would give me a kick, because so much, I was talking to my son in preparation, and like, why did he like your stuff so much? What does it mean to him? He's 18 years old. He decided not to go to college, to really, like, try to take life on his own terms. And he sees you as an inspiration.
Yeah. Part of me wishes I hadn't gone to college. I mean, I had a great time and stuff, but, I think about that a lot. If I were to go back, would I go to college or not? For the train hopping video, it was a similar thing where that's something I always wanted to do. And it was fun. And I was like, oh, I should film this and make a cool video. And then while making it, as the world is changing and you start to think about your own privilege more, you know, as a white guy, it wasn't, again, in the editing when I decided to add the, I don't know if you remember, but there's the hashtag white privilege.
Yeah. All the times you didn't get arrested for doing things that, that someone who wasn't you would have gotten arrested for.
Right. And when those moments happened, I wasn't really conscious thinking about it. It was going back and editing it. When you just see how, you know, people of color are treated differently by the police, you can't help but to be like, oh, I'm just some white guy who's able to do all this stuff. And, you know, you have to acknowledge that. I think, you know, I get comments from people who are like, that's racist for you to say that. And, you know, to white privilege and blah, blah, blah. And whatever. There's always crazy people on the internet, but I just think that you can't not acknowledge those things nowadays. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I mean, part of your, I feel like your persona as a comedian, as a performer, is even if you're pointing out the ridiculousness of other people, you're not excluding yourself.
Right. 100%.
Right. 100%. So you're allowing yourself to be vulnerable there.
Exactly. That's clown school. Clowns have to be vulnerable. That's like the main word you learn from clowning, is a clown can be hurt. The joke is on the clown. The joke is not on the audience. And so, yeah, I always want to have that be part of it, is that, like, I'm the idiot. The joke's on me. I might learn something. I'm not just trying to be didactic and tell everyone this is what you should think or how you should live or whatever, you know?
Right. And that's, you know, as I help write books about nutrition and health, and as soon as I catch myself getting into that perspective of the expert, like, all of a sudden it becomes dry. I sound like an asshole. Whereas if I remember what it was like when I didn't know this and I was learning it and sort of, gee whiz, oh my gosh, look at the mistakes I made, all of a sudden that I then have a connection with my audience again.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So what does your kid want to do? What does he want to get into?
Well, he plays classical guitar. He's into He'd love to do video and and photography and just, I mean, every day he's like some new, like, here's how I want to express myself. Here's what I want to explore. Like, so I asked him, like, what do you like about Jeff Seal? What means something to you? He came up with two things. One was, he says, Jeff goes against the grain.
Right.
And the other one is, Jeff has fun by being a producer rather than a consumer.
For sure, yeah.
Which, you know, because a lot of, like, I was, you know, following you on YouTube, and you've got some videos that have a tremendous following, right? Hundreds of thousands of views. You also have a bunch of videos that have like 100, 200, and I'm watching them, and they're brilliant. They're it's like a 5-minute sketch about like the apple and the bag of potato chips. And I thought, like, this is brilliant stuff, and people aren't watching it. And I get the feeling like you don't really give a shit. It's like you didn't do it for the views. Like, if you were doing it for the views, you would have some sort of social media strategy.
Right. Well, it's funny. So, I have a group, like a comedy sort of production group. Me and my three good friends, we make a ton of comedy videos. We have another YouTube channel, and we had this series called Guardian Angels, and it was like loosely based, not really, but we sort of took the inspiration from, you know, the Guardian Angels.
You're wearing the Curtis Sliwa hat.
Exactly. So Curtis Sliwa got in touch with us, or his assistant did. And his assistant's like, Curtis Sliwa wants to meet with you guys. We're like,
no.
Yes. So we're like, all right. So we met with him, and he shows up, and he was like a fan of the videos. He really liked them. And something he said to us that was really funny. He's like, you know what I like about you guys is all your videos have like, you know, 100 or 200 views, but you keep making them. And we're like, yep, exactly. We just keep making them. But yeah, and to be honest, also for my own YouTube channel, I am trying to, I wish I could just pretend I was pure and I'm just doing, I am doing it just to do, but I am going to try and like get a little bit more, I'm trying to get some more subscribers and stuff so I can kind of like, you know, monetize it and make money and be able to do just that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not great at the whole social media stuff, or it's not that I'm not great. I just don't want to do it, you know?
Well, I'm projecting onto you, but I feel like there's a certain integrity to just doing the work that you have to sacrifice, or maybe I think you have to sacrifice to become strategic. Like, how do I get more people to look at me as opposed to I'm just going to do great work?
Yes. And,
like, cause you have fantastic connections. You're on a clip in Broad City with Ilana and Abby. Like you are well respected by some really well respected and accomplished people. And it feels like,
I'll take it. It's maybe a bit of a stretch, but sure, I'll take that.
Right. But I mean, there's something like, I feel this just in my business that I just want to go around telling the truth, having fun, helping people. And then every so often I'll come upon an article like, here's how you increase your subscriber base with this trick or with this strategy. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Totally. I mean, I think there are, for a lot of videos, like it takes a long time for me to edit. I edit and I edit and I edit. And a lot of times I hate the video until the final edit. And for me, that's just the only way that they're going to be good is if like, I just take a really long time to edit it. And that's just part of the process. I think, I do, though, want to start putting out stuff on a more regular basis. And so I think that there are videos that I can make that I don't have to sacrifice the quality. They could just be a little more less produced in between the longer, more produced videos that just take time, you know? But yeah, there are a lot of things that I don't do out of laziness or whatever reluctance. But you're right. I do think at the end of the day, it's like, well, no, I just want to make the good quality stuff. And sometimes that takes time, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what are your favorite like types of videos to make in terms of waking up in the morning and being like really excited about going and doing a project?
Well, so right now I'm working on, well, I have another train hopping video. Yeah. And I ended up going through Durham actually. So I'm excited about starting editing on that. But I have another video I'm working on. So in New York, they have they put out the 100 worst landlords list once a year. And so I have two friends that I'm working with, and we're going to these buildings that these landlords own. We're talking to the residents there and, you know, the stuff they have to put up with these awful landlords. And then we're going to go and sort of try and talk to these landlords, kind of like, you know, Michael Moore, Roger Me type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. Because like, you know, I don't know if you saw my honking video.
Yes.
Like I liked that. I thought it was fun. I thought it was very funny. And I was actually just earlier today, someone just honked so loudly. It made me jump and just made me so pissed off. I really do hate honking. But on the other hand, I do want to start tackling more meaty issues. You know, honking is a quality of life thing. It's annoying, but I think I'm excited about this new video where housing in New York, housing everywhere, every city in America is a huge issue, and it's, you know, part and parcel of inequality. And so I'm excited about taking on like a more meatier sort of heavy subject with more like larger consequences, and like the hope being that like it will, you know, shed a light on these awful landlords and what they're doing to their tenants. And, you know, the best case scenario is that it affects some sort of change. Probably not, who knows, but that's, you know, the hope, obviously. Right, so right. I'm excited about that. Those two videos I'm very excited about. And then stuff with, I'm going to start making, more videos with my comedy group Bankrupt. We're going to start working on a feature length film I'm excited about.
Oh, cool. I was supposed to say about the honking video. I mean, I loved it. And one of the things that I loved is that you're getting in people's faces, but you're sort of curious. You're not attacking them. You're just taking their statements at face value. And then you're immediately interposing it with this expert, this psychologist who's been studying it for 40 years, who immediately sort of contradicts and puts into context.
Totally.
Right. I like when she says, like, you know, you get used to it. And she says, when you say people get used to it, they're not getting used to it. Really, they're suffering. And
Go ahead.
I understand you know, the idea of getting into meatier issues, but this to me seems to be sort of a great entry into this idea of this is something that everybody puts up with. Nobody thinks anything of. And this is like your signature is like, this is not normal. And we could do something about it if we raised our consciousness. And you're doing it through this in-your-face comedy.
Totally, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I love a story that's sort of like hidden in plain sight. You know, it's like we all know that there's honking, but we just accept it, you know. But like, what if you just did something about that right in the moment? Or, you know, food, like we walk past these big dumpsters filled with perfectly good food every day without realizing it. But with that video, Arlene Bronzapp, it was amazing. We went and shot the footage of me talking to the drivers and then interviewed Arlene. And she's been in this field for 40 years. So it was sort of uncanny how everything she said related to exactly what we found when we went and talked to people, because she's been doing it for 40 years. So she's heard every excuse. She knows everything. And so it just matched up perfectly. But then also what you're saying about like not wanting to attack the people. Like there's sort of a quote my mom told me. My mom and my dad both used to be like very active communists back in the 70s. They were like Maoists. So my mom told me this quote of something. I don't know the exact wording of it, but Mao said something like, don't turn the people against the people. And so it's like, I don't like the idea of shaming individuals. So I don't want to be like, you're wrong for honking. It's more just like having a non-judgmental conversation with them. And if there's anything you attack, it's, you know, the sort of system that allows that, not the individuals. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love, it was hilarious where you're trying to figure out like who honked. Oh, he honked. No, it wasn't me. It was the red truck.
Right. I couldn't, no one would admit to it. It was like, I couldn't figure that out. Yeah. No, totally. Right.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I thought of when I was watching that, and that, you know, is reinforced by you saying you're going to talk to this 100 worst landlord buildings, is that,
yes,
that you're doing the job that the news media isn't.
Right. Well, there, it has been covered. The New York Times did do a really good series of articles on it. And the media is covering it, maybe not as much as they should. What my hope with this video is we'll make something entertaining and funny and shareable. So someone who might not sit down and read a 4-part long form piece in the New York Times might like be like, oh, watch this video. This guy goes and fucks with some landlords, you know, and to make it a little more entertaining and palatable than a, like, long, dry, you know, journalistic piece.
Right. And I was thinking about, like, you know, the news at 10, which
for sure,
which, yes, 10, you know, it's pretty corporate.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more like softer, you know, or like there's a car crash, that kind of stuff. For sure.
Right. So they're looking for the things that are not hidden in plain sight. They're looking for, this is extreme. This is going to get everyone's attention. This is, totally, you know, this we can do a teaser between 6 and 7 and people will tune in at 10.
Exactly.
And you're, again, you're introducing people to sort of the involutions of their city, the things that are right there,
totally,
that they're not aware of, and becoming aware of it. Like, as soon, like when I started getting into dumpster diving, I felt like, uh-huh, there was a difference between me and all my suburban friends who hadn't been initiated.
Totally.
Like sure. I'm seeing a different city than they are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that's great about, you know, any city, but also is, you know, there's everyone's got their own different story, you know, and there are a lot of people who have no choice but to dumpster dive for their food. I mean, for me, it was a choice. There was a period where I was broke and I was like, this will help. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Uh-huh.
But yeah, it is, you know, like you see when you're doing it, you see the people who need to do it or who choose to do it. And then the people just walking past going to like a nightclub or something. It's definitely, yeah, two different worlds.
Right. And in some of the dumpster diving videos, you offer it to sort of, you know, people walking down the street and right, how inconceivable it is for them to like, ugh. But it's like, it's wrapped. It's obviously clean and fresh and fine.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my friend who's been doing it for years. Sorry. I don't know if you're getting my phone dings.
That's right. It's realism.
Right, exactly, yeah. What was that time? Yeah, my friend, she's been doing it for years, you know, much longer than me. She's never gotten sick from doing it, whereas she has gotten food poisoning from restaurants, you know. It really is, like, I don't know of anyone who has gotten food poisoning from dumpster diving, you know. And it is, yeah, it's wrapped, it's fine. Even some of the stuff that's not wrapped, if it's not dirty, it's still okay, you know?
Yeah, and like, so, like, my kids took this, like, survival course from this local guy, And one, you know, he taught them, you know, like, you know, living in a tent and getting water and, like, you know, making your own. But one of the things he taught them was dumpster diving. And they both came away with this idea that the less I need to, like, the more I can live at that level, the less I'm a slave. And I'm using the word advisedly, but the less I am reliant and beholden on the system, the less I have to worry about sort of conforming. Sure. Because if I don't need, you know, if there's so much free stuff, like there's freedom in free. Right. Like if I can dumpster dive, then I don't need to chase a paycheck to the same extent.
100%. Yeah, I like that. There's freedom in free. That's, I might steal that.
Oh, yeah.
Like I try to have a deliberately unsophisticated palate. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like the more sophisticated your palate is, the harder you are to please, or the harder it is to satisfy yourself. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm getting more into, you know, sort of, I'm reading this book right now about socialism, and I'm getting more involved with the Democratic Socialists of America. And it is that idea of, like, you know, the, you know, you think of as the West liberal democracies have beating, you know, the, you know, communism in the East, but there is a certain, we think we're free in capitalism. And of course we are more than, you know, sort of the Soviet Union, but there, you're free to choose whatever job you want in theory, but you have to work these, you know, crappy jobs just to pay your rent, just to, you know, buy groceries and stuff. So it's not as much of a freedom necessarily as we think, you know, in sort of where we are at now with capitalism and all that.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a Facebook friend whom I've never actually met, Corey Robin, who's, I think, is a professor at, I think, Brooklyn College.
Okay,
and he just wrote a piece this week in the New York Times about.
Yes. Yes, talked about that in there too. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just pulling up the pit. It says, under capitalism, we're forced to enter the market just to live. The libertarian sees the market as synonymous with freedom, but socialists hear the market and think of the anxious parent desperate not to offend the insurance representative on the phone. It says, under capitalism, we're forced to submit to the boss. So that this, this idea that we're free under a market doesn't really hold true when the market kind of has you by the balls.
Exactly. That's what I was basically, I think that's what I was trying to paraphrase. I had read that exact thing. What he said it better. What he said is what I was trying to say. Hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I think that's, you know, the situation a lot of people are finding themselves in is, yeah, capitalism has got us by the short and curlies, you know?
Yeah. So I want to get back to something else you said, which I just adore. You said you try to have an unsophisticated palate.
Yes.
And so, you know, most of my work is around health and trying to get people to eat healthier. And you'd think, I would have thought that what I want is to get people to be more sophisticated in their palate. But it's exactly the opposite. I'm finding, like, you know, be okay with potatoes.
Yes.
Be okay with like beans and rice, with greens, with simple foods, as opposed to needing all your giggles, shits and giggles and jollies from, like, I think I need to make a gourmet meal all the time.
No, totally. Yeah. I mean, that's a sort of cliche. And I think maybe it was not what you said, what I'm about to say, that maybe Anthony Bourdain said, it's just like the best food is just good ingredients cooked simply. You know what I'm saying? And that's something, like, I think I lost a bunch of weight this summer, and a lot of it was from riding my bike, but it was also just from cooking more. And it was just like, just cooking, you know, real sort of food and just eating that, like, I, without even trying, lost some weight, you know what I'm saying? But I do like that idea of, like, there's so many, you know, I ran into a friend at the gym and he's like, I got this new thing. You know, you confuse your body by working out on Tuesdays and then eat food only with amino acid, and your brain thinks it's a protein, so it start your pancreas does backflips, and it's like, shut the fuck up. Just eat fruits and vegetables, you know? Like, eat fruits and vegetables, and if you want to get in shape, go outside and run until you get tired. If you want to build muscle, lift weights until your muscles are sore. Like, that's my philosophy. I'm not like a health person, but it's just like, just eat real fucking food. That's, to me, it seems like that is, you know, the at the basis of it, right?
Yeah, and again, you know, you're not a health person. I am, and I say exactly the same thing, and it's taken me 25 years to learn it because, again, it's hidden in plain sight because, you know, it's hard to sell a book saying, just go and run and eat food, right? We believe we need these hacks, like our bodies are somehow these broken machines that we need to constantly trick into being healthy.
Totally, totally. Sorry, I just told my friend to stop texting me. I don't know how to turn off the buzzing without getting rid of the audio. I guess I could just quit this thing. Anyways.
The dinging is fine.
The dinging is adding
real. Everyone who's listening is checking their phone every 10 seconds.
That's the thing. Exactly. I've had that happen to me. I'm listening to the podcast. You hear the ding. And I'm like, oh no, that was them. But exactly. It's like, I remember like, you know, growing up in the 90s, it was like the Mediterranean diet was the healthiest diet. And then I remember reading recently again, they're like, yep, that's still the healthiest diet. Not the healthiest, but it's still healthy. And then I read something else in the New York Times where it's like they did something where it's like if people ate real whole foods, whole grains, all that stuff, they could almost eat as – you can eat until you're full and they still lost weight compared to other stuff. But yeah, I think I would go crazy if I was always trying to like chase – the next sort of thing. It's just like they come out with the new science for so much stuff so often, but there are certain things it's like, no, fruit and vegetables, whole grains, done. Just, you know?
Yeah. Well, and again, your work and the way you look at the world, it seems, is like, this is all distraction. This is all, you know, I remember my favorite quote probably of all time from Frank Zappa saying like the, you know, politics is the entertainment arm of the military industrial complex.
That's hilarious.
But it's like it's bigger than that. It's like everything is the entertainment arm of the economic system.
100%. Yeah.
And you know, your work is kind of like X-ray into like, here's what's really going on.
Right. Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think ideally, that's, you know, that would be like a great video for me is to like, yeah, you know, shed a light on something that is, yeah, like I said, hidden in plain sight. And you any piece of art that makes you look at the world differently, I think is great. You know, like when you learn a new word and then you keep hearing it everywhere, if you see a piece of art and then you start noticing the world differently, I think that's always, you know, a goal to strive for.
Beautiful. So I'm really inspired because I have so much that I want to point out, like all the bullshit. And I feel like I've gotten into the habit of doing it in kind of an expert-y pedantic way. And I really want to be, inspired by the way you do it because it seems A, more fun and B, more effective.
Right.
So what are some, if I could pick your brain, like what have you learned in your life in performance and comedy that helps you, that you would give as advice to someone who wanted to further the mission of sharing, you know, truth and pointing out bullshit?
Right. I think, you know, like for me, is when you have a palpable passion or enthusiasm for something that comes off, you know, like that, that helps, you know, what it is you're trying to get across. You know, it's like when you're genuinely excited, about what it is you're talking about, that rubs off on the viewer, whoever it is you're trying to, you know, communicate with. I think, What was the question again? You like how to?
Well, what have you learned from performance and comedy that someone like me or other people who are change agents,
right?
Who tend, you know, we tend to get real serious, right? Like, yes. I've said this 1,000 times. The world is boiling itself. Everything's right. Gone to shit, and you're more effective in like spreading the message because you have these skills and insights and experiences as an entertainer.
Right. Yeah. So I think, like I was saying, having a sort of palpable enthusiasm and passion for what you're talking about, performing like comedy 101 is if you're having fun, they're having fun. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. If you're clearly enjoying talking about what it is you're talking about, that rubs off on the audience as well, you know? And I think in terms of comedy and clowning, like you said, being vulnerable, it's not like I hate being didactic in any way, and especially in comedy. You see a lot of comedy now, maybe more sort of like internet stuff, where it's very didactic, and there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, I agree with you 110% with the politics of what you're saying, but I feel a little lectured to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want to make a video at some point where I approach a subject with a thesis. And then I'm completely proven wrong by the end of it.
Uh-huh.
Learning or accepting that you don't know everything, you could be wrong. I think that just also makes for better art. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In terms of fiction, a movie that you don't quite understand the ending, you're going to talk about that longer than if it's spelled out for you. So like in terms of just going, I mean, I don't know how that would relate to health education. You probably can't have an ambiguous ending, but just like, you know, like ambiguity. I mean, I'm getting a little off topic here, but ambiguity in art, I think is more interesting, but just not, you know, being didactic, being vulnerable and willingness to accept that maybe you're wrong. In terms of comedy, I think those are approaches I like to take.
Well, I think it's a total match because if you think about like science,
yes,
like what we know about science has always been wrong.
Right, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Like for me to come out and say, okay, now we know exactly how nutrition works and how we should eat. You know, like in 100 years, they'll be like, you know, laughing in their coffee at how stupid we were.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's like what I was saying before, where it's like if you follow every new diet or whatever, you'll go crazy, you know?
Yeah. So I totally can see how being vulnerable and being, you know, just as role modeling for my audience, if they're all fixed and like, oh, this is, you know, keto is the way to go, or the,
right,
you know, workout on Tuesday and then give my pancreas backflips on Thursday is the thing to do. And everyone's locked into this idea. For me to model, like, we really don't know. There's not much evidence, but here's what seems to be true.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did you say keto?
Keto, like the ketogenic thing that like all these people are like, you know, eating only meat and.
Oh, like the paleo diet?
Yeah. Like.
Okay. Totally. Right.
Right. Like
just. They just found like toasted breads in some cave somewhere.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, if you're going to do the paleo diet, they ate bread. But anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to look at the whole, like to look at the whole evidence, but also look at common sense.
Right.
Like, which is right, like, I don't know, just looking at the whole world. So,
right,
you know, one of the things you do in your videos is you make connections.
Right.
And I don't know if you do it in post or while it's happening, but you're looking at, well, this is true for this specific situation. What does it mean for, how can this inform the way I live my life?
Totally. Yes. I mean, a lot of it is definitely done in post for sure. Like, for me, that's another reason why I, you know, take such a long time editing is, for a lot of the videos, there's no script. You know what I'm saying? I have sort of an idea and we go out, but the writing of it happens in the editing. And that's when, yeah, more connections are made and more, you know, sort of, context and all that stuff. Although for this video I'm doing now, I'm trying to go in with more sort of a little bit more of a stronger sort of outline or arc for what we want, more so than I've done in the past, just because it's sort of a bigger thing and there's a lot more to it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So to conclude, I just have like a an insider baseball question about how you produce some of the videos. So there's some where you're walking through the streets of New York. You're not holding a mic. You're not obviously mic'd. The camera is moving backwards, and you sound really good. Is that like someone's walking with a boom mic over your head, or how are you doing that?
Sometimes, but a lot of that's probably a lav mic.
All right, I missed it. I was looking for it, but I didn't see it.
It's underneath my shirt. I'll like tape it to like my chest, basically.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of that is lav mics for sure. Although I think the same thing too, because I'm sure you've seen Casey Neistat's videos, right?
Yeah.
His audio is always so good. And I guess it's just from he's got a great shotgun mic attached to his camera. Cause I'm like, he can't be loving up for every one of those videos. I'm curious how he gets good audio on a lot of his stuff. He'll be on his bike going down the city. And I'm like, is that just from his shotgun mic? I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny. Doing sort of podcast and video. Like I look at everything like where's the mic?
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. I see movies and I'm like, how are they getting such good audio? It's like, this is a hurricane going on. Like, it doesn't look like they dubbed it afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, after you do it yourself, you know, you go outside and try and film something, and there's a light breeze and like the audio's like, and then you see them on a movie. You're like, you're on a boat. Like, how are you getting this freaking audio? Like, and you're not wearing a shirt. Like, where? How do they do it? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess somebody has very expensive shotgun mics somewhere.
I guess so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, totally.
Well, cool. So this part of the conversation is going to interest just a few people.
For sure. So, for sure. But the sound nerds.
It's my podcast. What the hell?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Exactly.
Yeah. So this has been such a fun conversation. I've been looking forward to this. I've been, you know, watching your videos and talking with my son, which, you know, it's great to be able to interact with him on such a concrete and deep level. So I really want to thank you for the work you do, for allowing us that opportunity.
Cool. Thanks, man. That's really cool. Awesome thing for you to say. Like you said, some of my videos only have like 50 views. So to hear someone say something like that is super cool. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you never know where it's going to go.
Exactly.
Right? Who those 50 people are and what they take away and how their lives have changed.
100%. That's one of the great things about the internet. It could be 50 people anywhere in the world. You never know.
Right. Like when I was starting to podcast and I just had, you know, maybe like 100 listeners, 100 subscribers, and I was very, you know, disappointed and then someone said, suppose you could get 100 people to come to an auditorium and talk to them once a week. Like, 100%. Would you do it? I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that with videos too. It's like, oh, 200 views. Like I haven't performed in front of 200 people that often in my life. So that would be a good audience for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, regardless of what strategies you use to get more subscribers and monetize, I think the world of your work, I think it's opening people's minds and hearts. And so I'll put links to your website and to the your YouTube channels. And I think, you know, the world's a better place for more people getting infected with your mindset.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thank you so much for saying that and having me. I had a great time talking to you. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot. Let's stay in touch. I'll look you up if I'm in Brooklyn. Maybe I'll tell you as you do a video and I'll learn a few things.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. Yeah, and send a link to this when it goes up too.
Will do.
Awesome.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay, be well.
All right, three cheers for comedy, for vulnerability, for passion, for an adventuresome spirit. Thanks for listening to this interview with Jeff Seal. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you are a fan of the podcast and you'd like to support our mission, the easiest way to do so is to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. If you'd like to find out more about WellStart Health and our 12-week health retreat, virtual health retreat, our health intensive, whatever we're calling it this week, check out wellstarthealth.com. And if you'd like to dive deeper into Jeff's work, you can do so in the show notes of today's episode, which again is plantyourself.com/286. If you're new to this show, you can catch up on 285 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. Speaking of supporting the show, I would love it if you were to become a patron, and you can do so by going to patreon.com, searching for Plant Yourself, or you can go to plantyourself.com and look for the Patreon link in the right sidebar. Both will take you to the same place where you can make an ongoing monthly contribution and become a legitimate financial supporter of the show. I understand that not everyone can do this. In fact, one of the things I love about podcasting is that there are almost no financial barriers to people consuming this information. So if you're one of those people who actually could pay something for it and know that your work is actually subsidizing thousands of people, because there's thousands of people who listen to this show for every subscriber, for everyone who becomes a patron, that your money is really going quite a long way towards helping this information become more accessible to people. I was just listening to a Sam Harris podcast with his guest, Jaron Lanier. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. Jaron writes about technology, and he's quite radical in a lot of his views. And one of the things he says that goes against almost everything that I heard when I was coming up in the internet was he doesn't believe that information should be free. In fact, he thinks it's a form of exploitation of people who produce valuable information, valuable things, things that change people's lives, if we insist that everything has to be free. So, for example, he talks about these incredibly valuable content platforms like Facebook, like Instagram, like Google, like LinkedIn, where the platforms themselves produce nothing. It's people like you and me who produce all the value, and yet it's a very, very small number of people who are reaping all the benefit. And or at least find the financial benefit. And it got me thinking to become more strident and overt in asking people to support this show. If you find it valuable, if you find media valuable, and not all media is equally valuable, and you find some more useful than others, more inspiring, more truthful, more in line with your values and what you want to happen in the world, then Jaron kind of embolden me to really challenge you to put your money where your mouth is. The truth is, this podcast is my donation to the world, and the money that I get back in the form of patrons is a small percentage of what I put out in terms of the time, in terms of the financial commitment of equipment and hosting, and in terms of the economic gain that I forego by doing this. So, Jaron, thank you, if you're out there listening to this, for emboldening me to say, you know what, information, this podcast is free. It's not supported by advertising. So my goal here is not to have some advertiser bend your free will around a product. My goal is to give you more free will to make the decisions, to make the choices, to take the actions that you want to take to help make the world the way you want it. And if one of those decisions is to pony up and go to patreon.com and support this podcast, I am going to be bolder about encouraging you to do so. All right. In garden news, the grapes are ready. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Also in garden news, there are these flowers. I think they're called, butterfly peas, something like that. They're bright blue, and we're harvesting about 50 or 60 of them a day and drying them, and they make tea
when you pour hot water into it or even cold water, that turns a really deep cobalt blue. And then if you add an acid to that, it turns sort of a pinkish purpley color. Like if you ever did those acid base tests with the cabbage juice in science class, I think it's the same sort of thing. All right. In running news, I'm working up to zone 2. I think I discovered that my zone 2 is actually a lot faster and more heartbeats per minute than I was thinking. I think it's actually in the 30s, not in the teens or 20s. So I'm working back up to that. All right, time for some thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use Sabali Dawn, the Dance of Peace, as the theme music for the show. Check out willridenour.com for more of his beautiful choral music. And last, thanks to all of you podcast patrons. Got a couple of new ones this week, so listen carefully to the end. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Maurer, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hathley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Burns, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jennifer Kanofsky, David Isaac, the Mysterious Michelle X, Elizabeth Felton, Victoria Dolman, Novalaya Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julianne Rollins, Jewel Dolan, Sarah Durkis, Ronza Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Bedden, Gila Sayre, David Donahue, Blair Cyber, Dorona Visa, Gio and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth Ann Punderberg, Misha Rosen, Michael Lorabeck. The equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Lindemann, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Bergner, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable, Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Berry, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Dean Norton, Bonnie Lynch, Plant Happy Oregon, Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davis, Marion Blum, Teresa Copel, Shell Rudless, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Karen Shannon, Hirschman, Kate Rosalind, Ayat, Julie Lang, Holm, Hedegaard, Isa Tuzin, Wakani, Ainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Aviva Lael, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Sherry Orlikowski of Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Kamarani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker, Miracle Ann, Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Sherry, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Diva, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Cassia, Emily Iconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan Picorni, and Stephen Leanin for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.